And so, do you think, when you put together the things that you put together, is this what you're trying to express to the listeners or your collaborators, that particular set of valuistic or valuated?
This meaning like the way I hear, the broad shapes?
The broad shapes, the things like that, or...
You know, to be honest, I don't think a whole lot about what I want the audience to take from it. Mm-hmm. That I sort of leave that to them. Mm-hmm. Like, things have meaning to me.
So it's not important to you what they...
It's important to me that they find it compelling, that it moves them. It's not important to me specifically in what manner. Like, if I write a song that comes from this deep place of emotional grief... And I put this song out and play it. And if someone else hears it and says, oh, that was just profoundly beautiful. Whereas it's like a really dark place for me. And if they interpret it as something else, the fact that they find it profound mm-hmm. is important to me. The specificity of that, not so much.
And why do you think that is? What is it in music? What's this?
I think a basic philosophical thing for me is once I put it out there, it's not up to me anymore. Mm-hmm. Once I play it, it's on you to make something out of it.
And what do people tell you they're making out of it? Have you had this experience? Have people talk to you to get feedback?
Yeah, a lot. Not real specific sort of feedback. Although this, I mean, I was referring to a specific tune, this place of deep grief. That tune, oddly enough, always gets reactions from people. Mm-hmm. And they often don't know how to put it. Mm-hmm. But they will come up and say, oh, that was so great. That was, you know, like you can tell it touched them in some way, but they're just not really sure what to do with it. And it's funny because the whole point of the tune was I had all this emotion that I wasn't sure what to do with. Mm-hmm. And it sort of came out in this tune. And the tune leaves it in this, the tune, the piece, the work, I'm sure there's some German word I should use here.
The thing that it is.
Yeah, the thing that it is. It leaves emotionally in this very sort of not finished place. You know, and but that tune does tend to get a reaction. And I've sort of made a point of not telling the musicians exactly where it came from.
Do you... Oh, that's interesting. So the musicians are not in on the information, unless they listen to this podcast.
Well, I still haven't said exactly where it comes from.
I know. That's an interesting thing, because of course, you know, I pinned another musician down to tell me what's going on.
I mean, if you really want to know, I'll tell you, but...
The question is, do you really want to tell? I mean, is it, you know...
It's not something that I'm trying to hide, but I don't know that it's something that makes the experience of hearing the tune better.
Okay, interesting. And so, but do you find it, when audience members come up and talk to you about that tune, do you feel that if that's the tune that they come up and respond to, is that successful? Is that a mark of success? I mean, is it rewarding in some way that they respond to something that way?
Yeah, I think so. I think the fact that an intense emotional state for me that sort of was translated into this music a little bit out of necessity, because I didn't have anything else to do with these feelings. Mm-hmm. The fact that I could successfully translate that emotion into music. Yeah, I mean, I feel some sense of accomplishment at that. That I, you know, at least have the technical skills to convey some emotion.
Operating on that level of the emotion and doing that again.
Because I don't have that much emotion. You know, like events of that magnitude, fortunately, don't happen in your life so often.
Okay.
You know, and you have to have other things to write about. So sometimes I write about food. Yeah. Or, you know, like it's not all about tragedy. Sometimes it's about,
how do you go?
Wow, he said something funny.
How do you go about writing about food? Let's say you're going to write a piece about the peas, other than past the peas.
So there's on the similar and in the opposite way record, there's a tune called Bag Full of Po' Boys. Mm-hmm. And the phrase, a lot of times the titles come first for me. I have this list of titles on my phone. And it was when Rob Mazurek was in town. And he was at the Open Ears the night he got there, and I walked out on the balcony to meet him. We hadn't met yet, and Andy Durda had picked him up at the airport. And Andy said, yeah, it was great. Picked Rob up at the airport. We went and got a bag full of po' boys, and now we're here. Because, you know, Andy's all about the food. I said, oh, bag full of po' boys. That's great. And so sort of some images of po' boys, very New Orleans-y. So the tune ended up being a kind of street beat sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But it also took this formal angle that was a little mix and match, like it's not a head, soul is head thing. There are these composed parts that come in and out of the improvisations. And that was a little bit inspired by my take on some of Rob's stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so that tune's about food. Although it's not really about food, but some conversation about food generated the title, which generated the tune.
Okay, good. All right, so that describes your relationships. And I want to talk to you about something else too, right before you cut it, which is one of your gigs that you've been doing a bunch of right now has been with Hamid Drake, right?
Yes.
How did that come about?
I have no idea. No, I kind of know. When Hamid came down to do the record with Rob Wagner, we met. At the time, I was in the planning stages of the Lucky Seven stuff with Jeb. Uh-huh. So I went and introduced myself to him. He and Jeb have been good friends for a long time, so... You know, I said, oh, we've got this mutual friend, my buddy Jeb Bishop, which immediately put him in this space of, oh, well, you must be cool. You're tight with Jeb. So we hung out a little bit when he was here. The next time he came to town, I ended up sitting in with him. He was super cool. Spent some time talking, you know. The next time he came to town, he asked Benjamin, I think. He said, well, get, you know, Ben had booked a number of gigs. He said, oh, well, get Jeff on one of those. So I played a gig with him and went well, sat in the next night. We, you know, hung out, talked about Don Cherry and stuff, you know.
Did you play with Don Cherry?
Yeah. I mean, spent a lot of time playing with Don Cherry. They were very close.
And what did he tell you about Don Cherry?
You know, it was mostly just kind of like road stories and road funny story. Little, you know. And just tell me about Don. What's, you know, that kind of thing. Although he did one time tell me that he thought Don was the greatest student of music that he had ever met. Like Don would go study this Indian music and just get it. Like he had this way for really grabbing the essence of what something was about. Mm-hmm. That's the, like what sticks out to me of what Hamid told me about Don. Anyway, and then I went up to the Vision Fest that year and ran into Hamid and we're talking. He said, hey man, you know, my next record, I'm going to do this like free jazz reggae record and I want you to come play on it. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, great. Thinking like, yeah, okay, he might call me, he might not. Well, he called me. So I went and did it. We did the session and we've been to Europe 3 times now and got a couple more coming up this year. Mm-hmm. And it's fabulous.
And that's interesting because it's another Chicago connection. You got him all over, the trombone teacher. It's quite striking. There's something with you in Chicago. Tell me about playing with Hamid Drake.
Well, the band is called Reggaeology. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially if you took 6 great improvisers mm-hmm. and made a reggae band out of them mm-hmm. is what it is. We do some fairly abstract improvisational stuff, but a lot of it is largely just like we play these slamming reggae tunes. Uh-huh. And it's 2 trombones. It's Jeb Bishop and I. Jeff Parker plays guitar. Josh Abrams plays bass. And Napoleon Maddox does rap and beatbox stuff. Okay. And Napo and Hamid get this great rhythmic thing going. They do these duos with the beatbox and the drums that are fabulous. So that's what it is. And it's, you know, Hamid has this way of putting bands together. I think it's as much about the personalities as the instrumental skills. Mm-hmm. Because really, I mean, there's no other reason for me to be in the band. Like, he wanted 2 trombones. And I'm, like, don't get me wrong. I feel like I'm a good trombone player. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of other good trombone players out there. But we hit it off on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And he knew, you know, Jeb and I are close. And so just like when you go on the road with that band, it's great. The mix of personalities is beautiful. even when you get in the crazy, hectic, weird road stuff, nobody freaks out. You know, like, everybody, they're all consummate pros. And then the music is just fabulous. Because if I had to pick, like, you know, okay, pick three guitar players, pick three bass players, pick three drummers that you'd like to work with, Jeff and Josh and Hamid would be in that three for me on every level, you know. And Hamid's got this interesting way of leading the band. I think he's got this very specific idea about what he wants to happen, but he never really comes out and says, do this. It's this very, like, sort of Jedi mind trick way of... That's the wrong implication. It's not like he's tricking us into doing things. He's letting us discover those spaces. He's sort of guiding us towards the spaces he wants us to find without saying, do this.
How does he do that?
I don't know. That's one of the things I'm trying to figure out. But at first, when we first went in, you know, like, he didn't have anything written. We sort of put all this stuff together in the studio. And my first reaction was like, man, that's kind of a cop-out. But then I realized, watching the process go, no, he's very much in control of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And he knows what he's going to get.
How do you know when he gets what he wants?
How do I know when he gets what he wants? Because he stops asking questions.
Okay, interesting.
He has, as long as he's asking questions, you know, he's still sort of pointing it. Because he'll never say, do this, but he might say, what about this? Or have you thought about, or what would happen, you know, what would happen if... And sometimes we try, like, completely whacked out craziness. And it doesn't work, and then we leave it, you know?
You can get that.
No, it's all right.
And what do you think he's going for? Kind of like, you know, with this project. I mean, this is, that he just loves reggae. And...
He's got some history with some reggae. Yeah, I think a lot of it is he likes reggae. I think some of it might be that he's looking for something that has a little bit broader, broader appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that it's a commercial thing, because it's still not a commercial thing. But it can be a little wider reaching than the sort of standard, quote-unquote, free jazz thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, he plays with all the heaviest living free jazz people in the world. You know, the biggest innovators and whatnot. So he would know. That's why I'm asking. That's very interesting. Content. Well, that's interesting, and I guess maybe I'll leave it there. Is there anything you want to talk about?
Oh, we got through a lot. I don't know. I'll have to go degree style and come back and interview you.
Okay, you can do that. I'm probably up for a second visit to whatever's going on. That's the case. Are you recording anything? Is anything going on?
We just did that record with Marcello. Or half the record with Marcello Bonetti and Rex Gregory and Helen and I last week.
Mm. That's with Marcello's leader, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. I don't have anything coming up with me as leader. I'm, like, so busy in this academic thing that I haven't really had the creative energy to do that. Although I'm starting to feel the urge.
What's Marcello's thing about?
It's interesting. It's in some ways very European.
What makes something European?
It's... He deals with a formal thing that feels almost hints at being classical. I don't want to say it's like a classical type of form, but it's definitely not a, like, jazzy head solos head kind of form.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, do this and then there's backgrounds and then this shout chorus. It's not. It's this other, almost more elegant approach to the way he constructs things formally.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some of those formal components are like freely improvised sections. But it's just there's an elegance to the way he deals with form that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a quirky melodic sense. You know, sometimes drummers will do things in this very non-standard way melodically, which I think is super cool. It's, you know. But in terms of me pushing stuff, I don't have anything going right now. But I'm feeling the urge to do that. I got to figure out what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, if there's nothing particularly you want to talk about, then I think we're done.
Let's go. Yeah.
All right. Great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Perfect.